te vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 48, Chapter entitled Krishna Pleases His Devotees, Text Number 22. Dehadi,
Dehadi,
Upader,
Upader,
Anirupitatva,
Anirupitatva,
Havo,
Havo,
Na,
Na,
Sakshan,
Sakshan,
Na,
Na,
Vidatmana,
Vidatmana,
Syat,
Syat,
Atona,
Atona,
Bandhas,
Bandhas,
Tava,
Tava,
Naiva,
Naiva,
Moksha,
Moksha,
Syatam,
Syatam,
Nikamas,
Nikamas,
Atvai,
No,
Viveka,
Viveka,
Dehad, Dehadyupader anirupitatva. Dehadyupader anirupitatva.
Dehadyupader anirupitatva.
Bhavona sakshanna vidatmanasya.
Bhavona sakshanna vidatmanasya.
Bhavona sakshanna vidatmanasya.
Bhavona sakshanna vidatmanasya.
Atona bandhas tava naiva moksha.
Atona
bandhas tava naiva moksha.
Atona bandhas tava
naiva moksha. Shatam nikamas tvai no viveka. Syatam nikamas tvai no viveka. Dehadyupader anirupitatva. Bhavona sakshan nabita. Sorry, nabita. Bhavona sakshan nabidatmanasya.
Bhavona sakshan nabidatmanasya.
Atona bandhas tava naiva moksha.
Atona bandhas tava naiva moksha.
Shatam nikamas tvai no viveka. Deha.
Deha.
Of the body.
Adi,
Adi and Son,
Upade,
as material designative coverings. Anirupitatvat, because of not being determined. Pava, birth. Na, not. Sakshat, literal. Na, no. Bida, duality.
Atmana,
for the Supreme Soul.
Shat,
exists. Ataha, therefore. Na, no. Banda, bondage. Tava, your. Naeva, nor in fact. Moksha,
liberation.
Syatam,
if they occur.
Nikama,
by your sweet will.
Twayi,
concerning you.
Naha, our. Abhibeka, erroneous discrimination. Translation and purport by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. Since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore you never undergo bondage or liberation. And if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. Translation responsibly. Since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation. And if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. Purport. Here Akrura states two reasons why the Lord appears to be covered by a material form, or to take birth like a human being. First, when Lord Krishna executes his pastimes, his loving devotees think of him as their beloved child, friend, lover, and so on. In the ecstasy of this loving reciprocation, they do not think of Krishna as God. For example, because of her extraordinary love for him, Mother Yashoda worries that Krishna will be injured in the forest. That she feels this way is the desire of the Lord, which is here indicated by the word nikama. The second reason the Lord may appear material is indicated by the word aviveka. Simply because of ignorance, a lack of discrimination, one may understand the position of the personality of God. Sorry, one may misunderstand the position of the personality of Godhead. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, in Lord Krishna's discussion with Uddhava, the Lord elaborately discusses his transcendental position beyond bondage and liberation. As stated in Vedic literature, Deha Dehi Vibhago Yam Neshwere Vijate Kwachit. There is never a distinction of body and soul in the Supreme Lord. In other words, Sri Krishna's body is eternal, spiritual, omniscient, and the reservoir of all pleasure. Om Gyan Timanandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mayam Vidati Swa Padantikam Vansha Kaupatarubhyascha Kripa Sindubhi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Rama, Hare Hare. So it's an interesting verse, as are all the verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're all interesting. That's what differentiates Srimad Bhagavatam from mundane literature. Like that. Mundane literature is dry and hackneyed in its content. Right? And this is stated by the Bhagavatam itself in the fifth chapter of the first canto. It says that material literature is like a place of pilgrimage for crows. Right. Nothing that a crow is interested in is generally very valuable. Right? I've seen crows eat all sorts of disgusting things. You can't even mention like that. Just disgusting. Right? So this is the same as what is in a mundane literature. in this day and age. It is simply worthless. Right? It doesn't have any content, anything of value, by and large. Of course, there's something of value in some places, but by and large, there is very little of value. And you see, in many of the literatures, there is virtually nothing of value, right? Especially in the tabloid press and so forth. You see, like in very erudite literatures, such as Woman's Weekly, Dolly Magazine, Cosmopolitan, TV Week, right? That it is just full of garbage. As the Bhagavatam says, the crows are interested in garbage, right? It is garbage. There is no content. Or in other words, there is nothing which will benefit the soul. And for one who is a transcendentalist, who has a taste, a higher taste, for param drishtva nivartate, for one who has that param drishtva, that superior taste of the spiritual energy, he is not interested in these material topics or subject matters. He doesn't find them stimulating or interesting. Right? There's nothing in it. Right? You may read those topics, those subject matters, but you do not feel any satisfaction in the heart. And simply it binds one to the bodily concept of life. Basically, those literatures, such as the ones we mentioned, like Woman's Weekly and so forth, they just talk about how much this person is, just like we're doing Harry Nam yesterday around the city. And as you're going around the city, basically you can keep up with the world news just like by looking at the headlines of the newsstand. Right? I remember when I was a brahmachari for 8 years, I never ever read a newspaper, I never ever listened to the radio, I never ever watched TV, and I was never, you know, ill-informed about what was going on in the world. Because if you want to find out what's going on in the world, you know, if there's something really important, people will tell you, right? And that happens about once every 6 months. You know, there's something actually eventful, truly eventful, takes place. And the rest of the time, you can just keep up just by looking at the newsstand on the headline. You can find out what's going on. So yesterday, we're doing Harry Nam around the city, and I saw the magazine, one of the ladies' magazines, and it said something about Oprah Winfrey's weight problem. So we're just talking about the body. It's just the bodily concept of life, right? Oprah is putting on weight, right? And then, in 2 months' time, what will be the headline? Oprah is losing weight. And then 2 months after that, what's the headline? Oprah's putting on weight. And 2 months after that, what's the headline? You know, she's struggling with her, you know, psychologically now she's struggling with her weight problem. Like that. It's just the bodily concept of life, and at best it goes on to the mundane mind. So there's no pleasure in it, and there's no content in it, and there's no benefit in it. So therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, if there was only two books left in the world, there would not be any problem. If there was only the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam left, there would be no loss. There would be no loss. Right? Now the Bhagavatam is exactly the opposite of this mundane literature. It is full of rasa. Right? It is like bhakti ras, amrita sindhu. Rupa Goswami has described the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Right? Bhakti ras. Right? The relationship between Krishna and Krishna's devotees is full of rasa. What is rasa? What's that?
Taste.
Taste, yep. What other definitions? Rasa. Juice. Yeah, I like that. Juice. I like that. Just like we have rasgulla. I don't know, you smile. Rasgulla. Or rasmalai. Right? What does ras mean? Juice. Like ras gula. Right? Imagine if you just got gula. Right? Here, have a gula. Have a dry piece of curd. Right? There's no enjoyment in that. But when you have ras gula, right? In other words, when there is rasa, or when there is juice within it, then it becomes relishable. Right? This is why When Krishna says, I am the taste in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, not the taste in water, but when he's talking about in regards to food, doesn't he say something? He says something, yeah, I'm the juice and the vegetables or something like that. So the word there he uses is rasa, right? Literally, the juice in the vegetables, where does the juice in the vegetables come from? The what? From the moon, right? It comes from the moon. That's where the juice in the vegetables comes from. The moon shines upon the vegetation. And by the moon's shine, right? Because the moon's shine is not ordinary. It's like the sunshine, right? The shine of the sun is not ordinary. The rays of the sun are not ordinary. And the rays of the moon are also not ordinary. And by the influence of the rays of the moon, then all the vegetation becomes juicy and opulent and fertile, like that. So therefore, within the vegetables, when we eat the vegetables, when they taste juicy and succulent, right, then they're relishable. But if they're dry and there's nothing in them, no juice in them, then there's no relish there. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is like that. Bhakti Ras, right? The juice between, the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees, it is full of rasa, or full of juice, right? Just like here, we have the pastime. It is mentioned in the purport. For example, because of her extraordinary love for him, Mother Yashoda worries that Krishna will be injured in the forest. Right? So there's a whole pastime when Krishna goes out into the forest in the morning in Nandagram. What time does Krishna wake up in the morning? What's that? Before sunrise, or around about sunrise, actually. In Vrindavan, he wakes up around about sunrise. When the sun rises, that's when he gets up. So he wakes up about 6 in the morning. Right? It's when, if you look at his Ashtakaliya Leela, or his Nitya Leela, in his eternal pastime, it's around about 6 a.m., that's when Krishna rises. Of course, he hasn't actually been asleep. That's the difference between him and us. Yeah? When Krishna gets up at 6 in the morning, that's because he's just got back from the forest after being out all night. Right? So Krishna doesn't actually take a lot of rest. He doesn't need to. Like that, because he's transcendental. So he wakes up at 6 in the morning and Mother Yashoda comes in and wakes him up. And then after Mother Yashoda wakes him up, he sits up on his bed and then Madhu Mangala, his very funny Brahmana friend, his very intimate friend, and Lord Balaram, right, his very intimate brother, they come and sit on either side of him on his bed. And then Mother Yashoda, she brings something in for Krishna to eat. What does she bring in for Krishna to eat? She brings in sweet curd. Right? This proves that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? Because first thing in the morning he begins to eat sweet curd. So he begins to take sweet curd. Right? This is like, you know, 6 in the morning. And he's eating sweet curd. Just got up. He hasn't even got out of bed yet. He's eating sweet curd. Right? And then Mother Yashoda is also feeding Balaram and Madhu Mangala. And Madhu Mangala finishes his and he says, is there any more? And then they give him some more and then he finishes that. And he says, do you have any more? They eat more. And then he finishes that and they say, do you have any more? He just keeps eating as much as you can give him. Sometimes, when he becomes angry, because he's a brahmana, and he becomes angry, and he says to the gopis, Krishna's girlfriends, Radharani and the gopis, he said, if you do not give me 10 million ladus, I will curse you. Right? So they have to give him 10 million ladus, right? And he eats them. Right? This is the spiritual world. This is the difference. Right? We think we're enjoying down here. Right? We don't know anything about enjoyment. Right? Unparalleled compared to the spiritual world. So, then Krishna, he washes his mouth, washes his face and so forth, his feet, his hands. And then he goes down to tend the cows, to milk the cows. He goes down to the cowherd barn to milk the cows. Then he comes back and he takes full bath. He gets dressed by Mother Yashoda and her assistants and some of his friends. And then he has breakfast with Balaram and Nanda Maharaj and all of his friends. And then, at about 8:30 in the morning, then Krishna, in his eternal lila, his Ashtakaliya lila, Then he begins to head out to the cowherd pastures to take the cows out to herd the cows in the forest of Vrindavan. So he's heading out into the forest of Vrindavan with all the cows. And at that point, Mother Yashoda, she runs behind Krishna and Balaram. And she runs and she says, have you got enough to eat? And Krishna and Balaram turn around and they say, yeah, Mother, it's okay, it's okay. Yeah, we've got our picnic packs, we have enough to eat, everything will be okay. So she said, okay. So they say, just go back to Nandagram. You just relax. You go back to Nandagram, we'll be okay. But so then she goes back. And then she runs after them again. And she says, but are you going to be all right? I think it's going to be very hot. You need an umbrella. No? And they said, Mother, it's okay, it's okay. We'll go and play. Like that. And then Mother Mangala says to Mother Yashoda, he says, Mayi. He said, we don't give a fig for your village of Nandagram. Right? He said, compared to the happiness that we get in the forest of Vrindavan, we don't even care a fig for your like that. We don't even care about Nandagram. Right? Compared to how much fun we have when we go and play in the forest every day with the cows, we don't even care about Nandagram. Like that. And then Mother Yashoda, she goes back and then she runs after them again and she says, but you don't have any shoes on. Because right? Krishna doesn't wear shoes in Vrindavan. He's just a cowherd boy, just goes out. You don't have any, but they say, Mother, it's okay, just go back. And then Balaram says, I promise I will look after him. I promise I will take care of Krishna. Nothing will happen to Krishna today. Like that. So finally they convince Mother Yashoda to go back, and then they all go into the forest. Right? So this is called Bhakti Ras. This is the rasa, or the juice, between the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's eternal associates. And this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is all about. And therefore the Srimad Bhagavatam is Bhakti Ras Amrita. What does Amrita mean?
Nectar.
Nectar? Yeah. And what else does it mean? Eternally? Yeah. It means without death. Mrita. Or Mrityu. Mata. Like sometimes earth is called Mrityu Loka. Mrityu Loka means the planet of death. Everyone is dying here perpetually, right? There is death taking place at every moment here on earth, like that, in all species of life, right? That is the reality of what we're surrounded by. So Amrita means death, and Amrita means deathlessness, right? Nectar, that which can award eternality. So Bhakti Ras Amrita. By absorbing the consciousness in the relationships in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Srimad Bhagavatam, between Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees, that will make you deathless. It will take you beyond birth and death. It will take you to the state of immortality, eternality. Sindhu. And this Bhakti Ras is like an ocean, right? Unlimited, right? Just say, like you're really thirsty. Say you fast for one day, you don't drink water for one day. Is anyone ever not drinking water for one day? Right? Everyone, many people are not drinking water for one day. You don't drink, so how do you feel? Right? And it's hot. It's 48 degrees and you haven't drank water for one day. Right? All you want to do is just drink. Right? And then someone comes along with a little, what do they call them? Eyedropper. Right? They come along with an eyedropper and they say, here, have a drop of water. Right? Right? Doesn't do anything for you. Right? That's what material pleasure is like. Right? We desire pleasure, but then we try to get some material pleasure, just like getting an eyedrop of pleasure. But Bhakti Ras, or the pleasure you get from the nectar of devotion, from service to Krishna, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, absorbing your consciousness in the pastimes of the Bhagavatam, that is like when you're feeling thirsty and you've been fasting. It is like drinking an ocean of nectar. Right? It's like going down to the ocean. Imagine if the ocean turned into nectar. Right? Just think of what your favourite drink is. Right? What are some people's favourite drinks? Does anyone here have a favourite drink?
Lemonade.
Huh? We're all my buddies.
Lemonade.
Right? Imagine if it was an ocean of lemonade. How would you feel? Ecstatic, right? Imagine if it was an ocean of Varuni juice out there. Right? Imagine if it was an ocean of mango juice. Imagine if it was an ocean of sugarcane juice. Imagine if it was a notion of lassie. I'm not talking about any lassie. Right? I'm talking about the lassie you get at the sweet shop at Govardhan. Right? Anyone had that lassie? What's that? Yeah, the pistachio lassie, right? They put pistachio. They give you the lassie. I mean, this lassie is up from another planet. Right? It's from Goloka Vrindavan. It's like, you haven't had lassie until you've had this lassie. And then they put pistachio. Nut, you know, pistachio, crush the pistachio and you sprinkle that on the top and there's your lassie. Right? And after that, then you have no desire for material enjoyment left in the material world. Fully satisfied. So imagine if there's a notion of that down there. You would not be sitting here listening to this class. Right? You'd be swimming off the end of Perfect Pier. Right? And drinking as you're swimming. Right? So this is what spiritual life, this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is like. Right? This is how much nectar there is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And still we have no taste to read Prabhupada's books. Right? What is our disease? Actually, I read the other day, Prabhupada made a statement. Prabhupada says, you can understand you're becoming free from the effects of the material energy by how much taste you are... how much taste you are... How do you say it? Deriving, yeah, or... Yeah, developing. How much taste you're developing for hearing topics about Krishna. Vasudev, Kata, Ruchi. Right? This is what the Srimad Bhagavatam teaches us. We have to develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. This is called Vasudev, Kata, Ruchi. Things which are related to Krishna or directly hearing about Krishna's pastimes. There is unlimited nectar in hearing about Krishna's pastimes. And Prabhupada says, you can understand that you're making spiritual advancement if your taste for hearing about Krishna is increasing and increasing and increasing. Right? In other words, when someone is giving class, when there's a class going on, you feel eager to go there. Right? You want to go there. You want to hear about Krishna. Right? You want to get that. You have a taste for hearing about Krishna. Not that you fall asleep. Right? If you're falling asleep in Bhagavatam class, then that is not a sign of spiritual advancement. Please understand that. Right? And it is also actually offensive. Right? It's actually mentioned within the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami that one of the 64 offences in devotional service is to sleep before the deities. And you see sometimes you're giving Bhagavatam class, yeah, and there's someone looking at you, and then in the middle of the class they go... Like that. Very inspiring. Very inspiring. I don't mind if people do that. But then, you know, I'd prefer if they came and gave class. And I'll sit there because I won't fall asleep. I'll listen to them. Like that. But if someone's going to, you know, fall asleep, don't fall asleep in class. If you're going to fall asleep in the temple before the deities, it's an offence. If you're that tired, go to bed. You know, just go home and take rest. Right? But if you're in the temple, you must understand you're before Krishna. It's an offence to sleep before Krishna. Right? It's also an offence to sit in a relaxed fashion before Krishna. Right? Sometimes you'll see like people all like, you know, kind of put their knee up and they'll kind of be leaning like this. And, no, you can't sit like you're sitting in front of Bhagavan, Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rupa Goswami says you should be sitting like this, like Padmasana, the way we sit, cross-legged, respectfully. Right? This is the way you should sit when you come before Krishna. Not you just kind of lounge back and like that. Rupa Goswami says it's also an offence to lie down before the deity. Right? I haven't seen that one yet in the Bhagavatam class, and someone just starts to lie down before the deity. He also says you should not stretch your legs before the deity. Sometimes our legs get sore when we're in front of the deities, or even if we're in front of Prabhupada, or even if we're in front of Tulsi, or even if we're in front of advanced Vaishnavas. If your legs are sore, which sometimes happens, then you have to stand up. Like that, but to stretch your leg, to put your feet in front of a superior personality, it's an apparat, it's offence. So we have to understand these types of etiquettes when we're listening to the Bhagavatam. So when we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, then we should be fully absorbed in rapt attention, right? Because the Bhagavatam is amrita, it is full of nectar. It is not like an ordinary subject matter, like that. Actually, there's one pastime in one of the Puranas which is told. About the personality of Nidra Devi. Does anyone know who Nidra Devi is? What does Nidra mean? Sleep. So the personality of sleep, right? In Vedic literature or in Bhagavat culture, in Krishna's creation, everything is personified. Right? Everything has personality. So even sleep, there is a personality of sleep. Right? So the personality of sleep, Nidra Devi, right? Then she said to Krishna one time, or Vishnu, she said, I have a problem with your devotees because I can't make them sleep. Right? Because they're always eager to be absorbed in you. Right? So when you actually have a taste for Krishna, right, for seeing Krishna, the deity of Krishna and so forth, you can't sleep. Your consciousness is just completely, your senses are completely captivated by Krishna. You can't fall asleep. So then Lord Vishnu said to Nidra Devi, he said, that's true. It's very hard to make my devotees sleep or come under the mode of ignorance. So I'll give one place where you can get them, attack them like that, overwhelm them like that. And he said, I give you the benediction, you can overwhelm them in Bhagavatam class. It's true. That's true. If I'm speaking a lie, a thunderbolt will hit me. No. So, it is actually mentioned, the Puranas. Then the Bhagavatam class, that's when the influence of sleep will come and try to overwhelm the devotees. Like that. So we have to be diligent. Right? It doesn't mean we have to sleep. Right? It's not okay, well, you know, it's in the Puranas, so I have to sleep. You know, I'm not a devotee if I don't take rest during the Bhagavatam class. No. It means that Nidra Devi or Maya will attack you at that time. So it just means you have to be extra on guard. Right? You have to be extra, how do you say it? Cautious. Can't hear. Yeah, extra cautious. You just have to take extra precaution during Bhagavatam class. When you come to Bhagavatam class, then you have to be ready to be attentive, right? You have to alert your consciousness. You have to make sure you've had enough rest, right? You've got to make sure you've had enough to drink, enough to eat, like that. So you can listen to the Bhagavatam with rapt attention until you become very advanced. And then, Parikshit Maharaj, he listened to the Bhagavatam for 7 days and 7 nights without eating or sleeping. Right? Or drinking even. That's how absorbed he was in the Bhagavatam. That's how much taste he had for the Bhagavatam. So it is described in the Puranas that sleep may try to attack us during the Bhagavatam, but we should not become overwhelmed. Right? Similarly, that benediction was also, or that pastime was spoken in the Puranas in the... which Purana was it? I can't remember which Purana. It was in Brahma Vaivarta Purana or the Padma Purana, one of the Puranas. There's also the pastime of Ekadashi. Right? And it is said that sin personified, the personification of sin, pap. Then he also came before Vishnu, before Krishna. And he said, Krishna was, or Lord Vishnu sent his Sudarshan Chakra. And he was chasing the personification of sin all around the universe. Right? The chakra was chasing him all around the universe. So finally he came back to Vishnu and he fell down at Vishnu's lotus feet. And he said, please give me protection. And he said, why should I protect you? You are sin personified. And you try to make everyone sinful. You try to make everyone forget Krishna. Because as soon as one commits sinful activities, then what happens? We forget Krishna, right? Automatically. As soon as sinful activities are performed, then automatically we become covered, right? That's why it is said that we have to follow the four regulative principles. Because when you break the four regulative principles, automatically your consciousness becomes covered and you forget Krishna. So he said, please give me protection. And Lord Vishnu said, why should I give you protection? Like that. And then the personality of sin said that you are Purna. Purna means you are complete, as it says in the Ishopanishad. So he said, because you are complete, somewhere within your creation, because you are God, and God includes everything, the Absolute Truth includes everything, somewhere in the creation, there has to be sin. Otherwise, the creation is not complete. And Lord Vishnu said, that is true. So he said, I will give you, he said, so give me somewhere I can take shelter. He said, okay, I'll give you somewhere you can take shelter. He said, on the 11th day of the waxing and the waning moon, what is that day called? Ekadashi. Right? The 11th day after the full moon and the 11th day after the dark moon, right? The Ekadashi. On that day, then you can take shelter within grains and beans on that particular day. So we see that's why on Ekadashi we have to be very strict in not eating grains and beans, because the personality of sin is within the grains and beans on that day. So therefore, devotees take special precaution not to eat grains and beans on those days, so our consciousness does not become affected with sinful desires like that. Because if you break Ekadashi, your consciousness can become affected by sinful desires. So devotees have to be strict. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was emphatic about this point. So, we see within the Srimad Bhagavatam there are all these wonderful pastimes. And the reason these pastimes are wonderful is because, as we see in this verse, Krishna is not an ordinary personality. Right? Akrura is a very great devotee of Krishna. In the seventh canto? Yeah, in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, there is one verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj, which describes nine types of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Pada Sevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dashanam, Sakyam, Atmani Vedanam. Right? Nine different types of bhakti. And one of the types of bhakti is called, or one of the items of devotional service is called, Vandanam. What does Vandanam mean? Prayers, to pray before Krishna. This is an item of bhakti. Right? We should every day pray to Krishna. Hands up if you pray every day to Krishna. What's that? Chanting is there, but chanting is also kirtan. So it's like a different anga. It's the same, but it's also different. A little different too, like that. Say it again. You pray to Krishna. Yeah, that's vandana. Yeah, that's prayer. Not that. That's vandana. Not that. So this item of bhakti is called vandanam, or prayer. Right? We offer prayers to Krishna. So every day we pray to Krishna. We pray to Radharani. We pray to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, to Jagannath Balaram Savaja, to Srila Prabhupada, to our Guru, to the previous Acharyas. Right? Every day we pray for their mercy to help us and give us strength in our devotional life. One time, Srila Prabhupada said, the only prayer that the devotee should pray for to Krishna is, please give me strength to continue in devotional service. Doesn't mean that we can't pray other things, but Prabhupada said this should be one of our main prayers. Please give me strength to continue in devotional service. So Akrura is the person who is mentioned as being each of the items, the nine items of bhakti, Shravanam, right? The person who is given as the example, someone who was excellent at Shravanam, who was that? Maharaj Pariksit. He was excellent at hearing the Bhagavatam, as we just explained. And then Kirtanam, who was excellent at glorifying Krishna? Shukadeva Goswami. Right? And then Smaranam, who was excellent at remembering Krishna? Prahlad Maharaj. Right? And then Smaranam, Archanam, who was excellent at worshipping Krishna? Right? Preetu Maharaj. Right? Archanam, Vandanam. Right? Vandanam means prayer. Who was excellent at praying to Krishna? Akrura, right? And this is Akrura's prayers right here in the Bhagavatam. This is what's being referred to. His prayers, when you read this section of the Bhagavatam and also the previous chapters when he was praying to Krishna, when Krishna went to take bath in the Jamuna, then his prayers are excellent. Right? His prayers are very deep. Right? They're like perfect prayers. They're like excellent. They're like an excellent standard of prayer to Krishna. So he says to Krishna in this particular verse, in this particular prayer, since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. So in the purport it is described there are two reasons why Krishna appears to be an ordinary person or covered by a material form. Just like when he comes to earth in his pastimes, right? When Krishna came 5,000 years ago in his pastimes, it appeared sometimes that he had an ordinary material form, right? Just like in the battle of Kurukshetra, there were points in the battle when Krishna's body was shot with arrows, and it is said that blood came out of his wounds. Now, why would that be somewhat strange, that blood's coming out of Krishna's wounds? Yeah, but why am I? I'm saying, why is it strange that there would be blood coming from Krishna?
Because
he's not material, and he doesn't have veins, right? It specifically says in the Brahma Samhita, his body doesn't have any veins. So how are you going to bleed, right? There can't be any blood coming from his wounds. Yet when he came in his pastimes, he displayed that there was blood coming from his wounds, right? He had perspiration, right? These kind of ordinary bodily symptoms were described, right? But these things could not be taking place factually because his body is not material. So it's just for his pastimes that he appeared to be human. So then it describes within the purport there are two reasons why he appears to be human, right? The first reason is because it increases the love of his devotees. When Arjuna sees that Krishna is being shot with arrows, right, and Krishna is prepared to take arrows in his own body to protect Arjuna, how does Arjuna feel?
Angry
at Krishna. Yeah, could feel like
that.
Yeah, angry at Bhishma. Yeah, like that. He feels overwhelmed with love for Krishna. Right? If someone stands between you and someone who is firing arrows at you, right, and accepts those arrows into his own body out of love, right, to protect you, yeah, you feel overwhelmed with love for that person. Right? So that's why Krishna performs these pastimes. It's the first reason why he performs these ordinary activities, in order to increase the love of his devotees. And the second reason, as it is described here, is because it gives a reason for the non-devotees to say that he's just an ordinary person. Because many of the non-devotees say he's not God. Right? Many non-devotees say he's not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's just an ordinary person, like us, like that. So Krishna says, okay, I'm ordinary. Right? If you want me to be ordinary, then I'll facilitate your desire. I'm the Supreme Lord, and I fulfill everyone's desires. Right? So if you want me to just be like an ordinary person, someone who's just, you think I'm material, then I'll pretend I'm material. Right? And when I get shot, it looks like I've got blood coming from my wound. Right? And then in his final pastime, when Krishna leaves this world, which is described in the very end of the Srimad Bhagavatam, after the battle of the Yadu dynasty at Prabhashetra, when all of Krishna's relatives destroyed each other in the fratricidal war, and Lord Balaram disappeared, there was only Krishna left. He was the only one left. So he went and sat down underneath a banyan tree, a small banyan tree. And then a hunter came along. And the hunter looked in between the bushes. He saw something in between the bushes, and he took his arrow and he shot the what he thought was a deer between the bushes. But actually, it was Krishna's lotus foot. Right? Krishna had his foot. He was sitting with his foot on his knee, and his foot was pinkish through the bush. It looked like it was a deer. So then the hunter shot the deer, and he thought, "Oh, I've shot the deer." But then the arrow landed in Krishna's foot. And then Krishna died from the wound within his foot, right? Which is completely impossible. Right? For a start, Krishna's foot cannot be touched by anything material. Right? It cannot be wounded, right, if Krishna does not desire it. And he can't die because he's Krishna. Right? So it's not, the whole pastime was just to facilitate the non-devotees, because the non-devotees said, well, he's just an ordinary person. And then when Krishna left this world, when he made his pastimes unmanifest, when he finished his pastimes in this material world, then he left a material shell, like a material form of himself made of matter. He left that there, and then he went to his next pastimes in the next universe. But then all the non-devotees, then they say, all the atheists, they say, look, he's just an ordinary person, he's dead. Right? He left a dead body. So how can he be God? So that's why Krishna does these pastimes, for these two reasons. That's why he appears to be ordinary. One for his doings.
Can I ask, why wouldn't he prove the non-devotees wrong? Why confirm what they think?
Because he's facilitating everyone's desires in the material world like that. Because in the material world, people want to forget Krishna. That's why the material world is created by Krishna.
Yeah.
Right? So everyone comes in the material world to forget Krishna. So Krishna is just facilitating their desires. You want to forget me? Okay, I'll help you. That's not what Krishna wants. Krishna wants everyone to come back to the spiritual world. But because people want to be separate from him, then he facilitates that. That's his nature. He does like that. So this is the two reasons why Krishna is performing these different pastimes. And we can understand from these verses of Akrura that Krishna is never ordinary. And you cannot ever consider Krishna to be ordinary. And as devotees, we never consider Krishna to be ordinary because he's Krishna. And the more faith, that's why we hear these prayers, because the more faith that we develop by hearing these descriptions of Krishna as being supernatural, right, as being transcendental, then when we hear his pastimes, we can enter into them with a more loving heart, not with any material conception that he's just like us, right? Because he's not like us, right? He's extraordinary. He's the supreme personality of Godhead. So we'll stop here and see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed. So yeah, that's just personalism, because you know we're people, and this question was asked a few months ago, and we said, just like when there's a feast, like some devotees like halibut and some devotees like sweet rice. So there's nothing wrong with a devotee asking for more sweet rice. You know, it doesn't mean that you don't take the halibut, but if someone brings around the sweet rice and then for the second time you say, yeah, I'll take more of that because that's my favourite, then there's nothing wrong with that. We don't say, oh, you know, what's wrong with you? You know, you should be taking the halibut, because that's his preference like that. So all of us have our preference. We all like, you know, some devotees like this speaker, some devotees like that speaker, like that. That's just natural. That's personalism. But it doesn't mean you don't go to the other classes like that. And the attitude that we should have when we come into class, what I try to do, someone said in a class like years ago when I first joined up, someone, I think it was Indrajumna Swami, he said, whenever you come to a class, try to hear three things which are relevant to you, which you can take away and you can use in your, you know, day-to-day life like that. So every time I come to a class, even though some classes, you know, you're feeling like, oh, you know, it's a bit dry, or I'm not really getting into it, or, you know, it's, but you can always get something out of it. You know, I've never ever been to a class where I didn't get anything out of it. Right? It's not possible to go to a class and get absolutely nothing out of it. So it's a matter of our having that eager desire. If you have the eagerness, then you will get some, you'll derive something from that class. So we should go. It doesn't matter who speaks, we should go. And on our behalf, we should stay awake. On our behalf. Devotees come, and you know, obviously sometimes, you know, the devotee is giving class, he may not be feeling so inspired, so he's not inspiring everyone else, everyone starts falling asleep, right? So who do we blame, right? Both people are to blame, right? Because the devotee has to like prod himself, you know, because he should be putting more effort into it. But it's also a responsibility of the people who come. You can't say, well, you know, yeah, the class is not good, so I'm going to fall asleep. That's not acceptable either. Sometimes you see in a class, it's like you look around, there's like, you know, 80% of the devotees are like, that. It's not good. It's not good. Like that. If you come to class, you have to stay awake. You have to be attentive. Right? And it's just a matter of having a taste. Because if you have a taste, then you will, even though, okay, the class may be a little dry, but there'll be some neck, just like, here we go, class. I think when Chiranjeev Prabhu gave class on Monday, right? So he was speaking, and he was just speaking fairly basic points. So I was kind of, when I was listening to class, you know, he said something, and I said, in my mind, I was kind of like, yeah, I've heard that before. And then he said another point, and I said, yeah, I've heard that before. And he said another point, and I said, yeah, I've heard that before. So I didn't feel like I was getting a lot from the class. But still, I was listening, because it was a nice class, but I didn't feel like I was learning a lot from it, or getting, like, things that I hadn't heard before. And then right at the end of the class, he just said something really far out. Right? And then, you know, then I was like, in my mind, I was thinking, I'm so glad that I stayed till the end. Like that, because there was just something at the end which he said which really affected me and helped me a lot in my devotional service. So we've got to have the eagerness, that's the point. It's got to come from us.
What's the point about preparation? Sometimes we go and we feel like something's just speaking up the top of the head. We feel like we're having a much better influence than this than before. So what's really going to happen to you?
Well, then after the class, then we can, you know, approach the devotee and say, Prabhu, you know, because this is a service. You know, it's a service. Giving class is a service. So if you're going to give class, you have to put effort into it. It's like all our services. It's like when we sweep the temple room, you don't just run around quickly, just, okay, it's done. Right? You have to get into every crack, you know, every corner, like that. That's the way Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cleaned the Gundicha temple. That's the standard, right? And we're just followers. We're just dasa, dasa, and das. So whatever service we do, we have to follow the standard on that. So when someone gives class, you know, if they haven't prepared properly, then we should, you know, say to that devotee, you know, it's a service. You really have to put the effort into it to make it a nice class, because it's a service to the devotee. If devotees get a nice Bhagavatam class in the morning, they get a nice kirtan. If the deities are dressed very beautifully, everyone feels inspired. You know, you come out of here at 8:30, out of the temple room. Tamal Krishnamaraj, my spiritual master, used to say this. He said, you know, if you stay in the temple room between 4:30 in the morning and 8:30 in the morning, by the time you come out, you're surcharged. Provided that the kirtan was good, right? That the class was good, that the deities have been dressed very nicely. You come out of the temple, you should just be fully surcharged, right? And fully enthusiastic to enter into your service for that day. And even some days you come to the temple and the kirtan, you didn't find it so inspiring, you didn't find the class so inspiring, still you should walk out feeling surcharged, because your attitude was that I'm so eager. You know, then you're just, even if there's only a few drops of nectar, you got those drops. Right? And one drop of nectar is so powerful that. I mean, sometimes I wake up in the morning, and like the mornings that I come to the temple, and I wake up and I'm under the modes, and I'm just feeling under the modes. Yeah, I'm not feeling very inspired about anything, really. And then I come in here and I see, you know, these particular personalities who mercifully stand on this altar to give us their darshan every day. And after I see them, you know, I walk out of here feeling totally different. Yeah? Because even if everything else is not so inspiring, there's one thing that's always inspiring, right? And that's them, because they're not ordinary. Right? If we can approach them with the right kind of attitudes. So. Okay. Any other question or comment?
This is the fasting of Krishna's death we discussed this morning. Is that due to some curse? Is there some curse given by someone, or just he, according to his own will? Because sometime in my life I have heard that he was cursed by Gandhari for killing his sons.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, there was curses placed. There was curses on the Yadu dynasty. There was curses on Krishna. There was all sorts of curses. But Krishna is not subject to curses. We should never think that Krishna is controlled by curses.
Just to fulfill the person who has given.
Yeah, that's it. That's his own design.
Yeah.
He may even do that. May even be Krishna doing that himself. He may arrange the curses to give the pastimes like a worldly. For the materialist, it gives them like a worldly sense of his pastimes, or a material way of understanding his pastimes. But Krishna is not under the control of the curses.
The curse was basically that Krishna, you will die in pain. Krishna would have left the material world in other, like without pain, but the died of the injury in the foot was related to the curse.
Yeah. So Krishna, he sanctions these things just in order to fulfill a purpose, his own purpose in his pastimes. Because like we said, as it explains in this purport, he has to give his pastimes like a material perspective for materialistic people, for non-devotees. So in order to fulfill their situation, or in order to cover them, then Krishna may accept... Actually, it's Krishna arranging these curses. Like that, and he may accept the situation, but he's not controlled in any way by the curse. Even pure devotees are not controlled by curses. Just like when Maharaj Pariksit was cursed to die by Sringi the Brahmana, but Prabhupada points out he could have counteracted the curse. There wasn't any problem. It wasn't like, you know, a curse could control. Like that. Pure devotees cannot be subject to the influence of the material energy, like, unless the Lord sanctions something to happen. Any other points? To become devotees. Yeah. Because everyone is a devotee. Everyone is a devotee. But as Prabhupada points out, some people have forgotten. One time Prabhupada arrived in the airport and the reporter said, "Why have you come to this country?" And Prabhupada said, "I've come to teach you what you have forgotten." So everyone is a devotee, but everyone has forgotten in the material world, everyone has forgotten that they're devotees. So therefore, Krishna as the super soul, he is, how do you say it? Like, equal. Samoham sarvabhuteshu, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that I am equal to everyone as the super soul. So it means to the non-devotees, if they want to reject him, then he facilitates that. He allows that to happen. And for the devotees who want to come to him, he facilitates that. But actually... as the personality of Godhead, as Krishna, Krishna wants everyone to come back to Godhead. That's why he comes to the material world in these different incarnations, to bring everyone back to Godhead. And his devotees are his servants, and they understand the Lord's desire, so therefore they work very hard to bring others back to Godhead. Right? In other words, to make them realize they are devotees. Because everyone is a devotee, but we've just forgotten about that. Just like ourselves, like sometimes we wake up in the morning, we don't really feel like a devotee. Right? Some days you have good days, you wake up and you feel very like a devotee, right? Very enthusiastic to serve Krishna. Other days you wake up, you don't feel like a devotee. So even in our consciousness, we're trying to rectify it. So it's our duty, our service to Krishna, to fulfill his desire in that way. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. Any other question?
Krishna says that they don't disturb the mind's ignorant. And then Prabhupada
devotees do it anyway, because the devotees are more kind than the Lord, because they have the same desire.
That's good. That makes sure they don't know anything as well. Because they understand the language,
like,
they
even
disobey
Krishna's instructions.
That's good. Yeah, that's good reference. Any other points? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki.